Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
This is RTE Radio 1. Drama on One is offered as a podcast at rte.ie/drama on one. And of course here on RTE Radio 1 on Sunday nights. Tonight's play is Kerry Plates by Shay Linehan. Tom and Maura O'Connor's life together moves seamlessly between Dublin and Kerry. They eventually settle on and settle in the kingdom, but Maura keeps a secret from her husband until the last possible moment. All seems lost until a lovable and unlikely form of care in the community takes charge. Starring Clive Geraghty as Tom and Deirdre Donnelly as his wife Maura, this is Kerry Plates by Shay Linehan.
It's hard to say exactly when you fall in love with a place or with a person. It's a gradual thing. But even so, there has to be a single moment when you stop being one way and start being another. And those moments, they cling to you like sticky backs.
Maura? Maura? What are you doing in the dark?
It just crept up. How was your day?
Are you okay?
I was just sitting here, thinking.
You've let the fire go out. What were you thinking about, in the dark?
Oh, this and that. How I feel about this and that. What time is it, anyway?
It's after 10. And have you decided how you feel about this and that?
I don't know. When people ask me how I feel, I tell them what I think, or what I think they want me to feel. Am I a pleaser, Tom?
You please me, when you're making sense. Let me turn the light on.
No, leave it. Come over here. Sit down.
This is all very strange.
Do you ever wonder what it would have been like?
What?
If we'd had children. They'd have families now. We'd be grandparents. We'd be surrounded.
Little lads with Ganseys spending the holidays with us, wrecking the place. Haven't we got each other?
Of course we have. We're surrounded by each other. Oh, don't mind me, Tom. I'm just a little blue.
Are you worried about something? Are you worried about leaving work next year? Is that it?
Yes, that's probably it. It's probably next year.
Well, don't worry. It'll be good, I promise you. You've earned your retirement. And look, we'll have the freedom to take off whenever we want, to wherever we want. In fact, we should plan another trip to Kerry soon. That always lifts the spirits.
Oh, I don't think so, Tom.
Oh, come on. Lost in the snug in Pawdy's bar and camp. We haven't been back there for ages.
My half term is coming up soon, but...
Well, then, it's settled. A week of kingdom air and you'll be as right as rain.
I was right about the rain. Came down in buckets.
Oh, that'd blow you out of it. Hello, Pawdy. We are just on our way to the caravan. Couldn't pass the door.
Maura and Tom, Jesus, lads, just smashing to see. Come around here, Maura, and give me an owl hug. Jesus, but you're looking well all the same. Have you lost a bit of weight? Or is this man of leisure not feeding you properly?
Oh, I've lost a little.
Oh, isn't the weather cat altogether? Oh, it's been like that all feckin' week.
How's Jimmy?
Well, the same Jimmy Kennedy has me driven mental asking after ye. He's afraid of being the only blowin' lift in the whole place.
Is he around?
Oh, he's right here, sure. Above in the corner with the Kerry kids. There's 8 or 9 of the girls around playing with him regular now. And me and Pauline. You know Pauline, sure, of course you do. He has them in every Wednesday night practising away on the tin whistles for the Sunday gig here, and one or two of them are starting on the accordion. Jesus, he's powerful altogether. For a blowing, do you know? In a voice that I'm like Ronnie Drew. Better I'd say. Oh, don't tell him I said that.
What kind of madness are the pair of you dreaming of these days?
Maybe I'll spare you.
Oh, don't. The nearest we get to madness these days is the M50 at rush hour.
There's a rumour about a singing dog. Please tell me it's not true.
Rusty? Oh. She was out with the Renbys on Stephen's Day and got herself a big write-up in the Examiner and a photo. It's in a frame there beyond on the wall beside Maura's painting of my beautiful self. Good girl, Maura.
Oh, and the subject is handsome, sure.
Do you know, a lassie from Boston the other day, when she saw it, was asking what was the connection between the Dingle Peninsula and Rasputin. The whore! Jimmy, 'tis Maura and Tom. I go down there now and wind them up for you. Wait till you hear Rusty sing.
Are we getting sucked in already?
Into what?
Codology.
A little nonsense now and then is savoured by the wisest men.
William Shakespeare?
Willy Wonka.
How much is that dog in the window?
Whoa, whoa.
The one with the waggly tail.
Whoa, whoa.
How much is that dog in the window?
Whoa, whoa.
I do hope that doggy's for sale.
Whoa, whoa.
It's great to see us again. We nearly have the whole song off. What do you think?
Dublin's cultural loss, Jimmy.
Oh, don't mind him. It's great. And Rusty's great, aren't you, girl?
You wouldn't tell to look at her. But here, lads, not a word to anybody. I don't want this to get out, but Rusty's a diehard. We only discovered it on Christmas Day.
A diehard, no less.
She was going mad altogether, and we didn't know what the dickens was wrong with her. And then we copped that 'twas the Queen she was barking at when she came to make her speech. She was up on that chair there barking at the television like her life was at stake.
A singing Republican dog, it gets better.
A toast, so, to Rusty.
And diehards.
And Kerry, all mad. Oh, but all right.
And Charlie, Jesus, we'll miss him all the same.
Cheers.
Cheers.
You remember Charlie? The bugger's selling up and moving back to England. He couldn't stand the quiet any longer, would you credit that?
Is he selling a house? God knows we could do with something without wheels.
Do you know, you could do worse than Charlie's. You'd be snug as a bug up there.
Well, right enough, it would be the perfect size for the pair of yous. And let's face it, that caravan has seen better days.
Oh, it is like heaven and earth up there, beautiful altogether.
Yeah, there'd be no harm in having a quick look anyway. What do you think, Maura? Might be just the thing. Maura? Maura?
It might have been the corgis she was barking at. Were the corgis with her? What?
We went to look at Charlie's place the next morning. The rain had lifted. The sun was even managing to poke through in patches. We looked around for a bit, and then Maura wandered to the front of the house. And then something strange happened. She stood stock still and just stared out to sea with this strange look on her face. And when I approached her, she slowly turned her attention toward me, but not exactly by looking at me. She was still looking out to some point far out in the bay. And when I tried to catch her attention, as I sometimes did when she drifted off, by making a silly face, she didn't respond at all. And that distance about her frightened me, and I tried to search her face, or what I could see of it, hoping to see what she could see, or feel what she could feel. But all I could see was her slowly coming back. And when she finally turned to face me, she was smiling.
This is it, Tom. This is where I want to spend the rest of my life.
I don't know. But we went back into the cottage and closed the deal with Charlie on a handshake.
Charlie was on his own there. That's the thing. You two will be okay. You've got each other. Jesus, but it's great all the same. I couldn't be happier. I might have a drop of punch in the back. We'll have to celebrate.
How soon before you've moved down?
Well, we'll have to sort ourselves out in Dublin first. Maura still has the best part of a year to put in at school. But soon after that, don't you think, Maura?
Oh, sorry, Tom, I was miles away. What was it?
From that on, we started to use the cottage as our bolt hole in Kerry. It was a way of getting ourselves there in stages. Prized pictures left the Dublin house and found their way onto the walls of the cottage. Memories that had grown over a lifetime in Dublin took root in the West, like they'd been born there. And finally, the big day came.
I'm throwing out half of these shirts. There's dozens here you haven't worn in years.
They're all perfectly good.
Even this one?
Oh, it might need a stitch.
Will you promise me something?
What?
When we get to Kerry, you'll learn how to do things. Like how to use the washing machine, things like that.
I'm not helpless, Maura.
I'm serious. Promise me.
I promise I'll learn the washing machine. I'll learn the washing machine and the piano. Happy?
The summers had been great. The big question was, how would we weather the winters? Not so bad, as it turned out. Maura's art blossomed, and she actually had an exhibition of her paintings in that restaurant just off the camp to Castle Gregory Road. The local press was there, and the Kerry kids, and Jimmy supplied the music to an ideal day. Well, almost an ideal day.
Come. I've Rusty in the car.
I don't think it's really appropriate, Paddy. People mightn't fully appreciate...
No, we have the whole thing off now. It'll be grand. Paddy, go get the star.
Oh, it's not over till the fat Labrador sings, apparently.
Our first anniversary in Kerry was coming up, and we were even planning a small party to celebrate. Maura was gone all morning. She had taken the red Toyota to Tralee General Hospital to follow up on some woman's thing that had been giving her problems. When she wasn't back by midday, I whistled for Saoirse, our newly acquired Jack Russell, who was addicted to beach walking, as I was myself. He yelped and squealed every time I reached into the closet for my old duffel coat and blackthorn stick. When I got back to the cottage with Saoirse, the car was in the driveway, with the engine still running. Maura was sitting in the driver's seat, clutching the steering wheel, just staring out to sea, the way she had done that first time. When I got alongside the car, she was still staring straight ahead, and I looked in her face, and this time I did see it. I saw what she saw. The cancer was out of the blue, completely out of the blue. But Maura had a gift for making things easy, and she was no different in those last few months. She painted for hours every day. We drank endless bottles of the wine that we had stored in the shed at the back of the house for a rainy day. We went over the years together, trying to remember everything, every blessed thing, trawling through old albums, so many photographs, until she got too bad to stay up in the day and too tired to paint. She wanted more than anything to be at home for as long as possible. And she was, right up to the end. We even had Christmas Day together. The girls came up with Jimmy and played her favourite tunes, and Paddy phoned in the afternoon so we could hear Rusty barking at the Queen. The next day, in second gear all the way, I drove her to Tralee. How do you feel?
Like a painting that's been put down. Not finished, just let go. It's a relief.
I'm afraid. Jesus, I'm really afraid.
Don't be. I won't let you be. Oh, look. Look there. It's the Wren boys.
The Wren, the king of all boards, Sir Stephen's day, he was cutting the furs. Up with the kettle and down with the pan. Give us a penny to bury the Wren.
Sorry for your trouble, they said, as they passed me in line at the little church in camp, and then down to the graveyard, where the sea breeze blew a gale. The girls with their tin whistles played Maura's favourite tune, Maguire and Patterson, and the wind took it away, so that it blew in and out on the breeze as though it were a wild seabird. There was food and drinks for the mourners back at Paudie's, which went on till the early hours with music and singing and dancing, just like she would have wanted it. I was fine for the next few days. There was lots to do. Maura had used the lounge as a bedroom because it was bigger, and that had to be tidied up and all the stuff put back. Jimmy and his son Michael were there to help, and the place was starting to look normal again. Birds had made a nest in the roof, and rainwater was coming in, so that had to be sorted out. Then Jimmy retiled the bathroom and replaced the shower with a power shower, because the old one had almost no pressure. I don't know how we had managed with it for so long. I even went to see Dr. Martin, who had been attending Maura through it all, for no real reason other than to close the file, a civil servant to my bootstraps. The fact is, I was so busy that I didn't have time to miss Maura.
Let me set your mind at rest, Mr. O'Connor. There was nothing more we could have done for your wife, or that you could have done. In these cases, once the diagnosis is confirmed, it's just a matter of time. And 2 years was pretty good in the circumstances, so don't blame yourself for anything.
But Maura, she barely had 6 months.
I have her files here. She was diagnosed just over 2 years ago in Dublin. You didn't know?
No.
She never had children?
Children?
Maura, she never had children?
No. No, there was just me.
You know, sometimes a loved one is the last person in the world one wants to tell. Mr. O'Connor?
What's that?
A loved one is the last person in the world. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. The last person in the world. No, I understand. It was only when Jimmy had packed up his van and he and Michael were backing out of the driveway and I was waving them off that I decided something. I was never so sure of anything as I was at that moment. Calmly and without any drama whatsoever, I decided that I was going to kill myself. How? Well, lager was my weapon of choice. Carlsberg, probably the best in the world. And the place? Ash's pub in camp seemed appropriate. I reckoned that 3 to 6 months would do the trick, even though I always had a good tolerance of alcohol. After the first couple of weeks, I was more or less drunk all the time. The month's mind came and went. I got to the church all right and managed to get a clean shirt, but I couldn't wait to get back to work. I kept looking at my watch as if I had a train to catch, which, in a way, I had. In the second month, I had a beard. Didn't have time even to shave. Jimmy's power shower hardly got used at all. Flop into bed, up the next day, back down to business again. He called into Ash's one of the evenings to check up on me after he'd been rehearsing with the Kerry kids. Jimmy did. It must have been a Wednesday or a Sunday.
How's it going, Tom?
Pulling the divil be the tail.
Do you need anything?
I have two in front of me, but thanks all the same.
No, I mean, do you want me to do anything? Like, is there anything, you know, that I could help with?
Oh, sure, I'm grand. The place is all fixed up now. Here's to you, Jimmy.
Well, maybe I could collect you one of the days. You might want to choose a headstone.
Look, I'm very busy just now. I don't have a lot of free time. Then, without warning, he hit me. Not literally. He didn't punch me or anything. But he might as well have.
It's only because we're concerned about you, Tom. We all loved Maura, and we love you.
It was an odd thing to say. Like he'd just come from watching Oprah Winfrey and thought it was an okay thing to say. What could I do? Only hurt him back.
You don't add up, Jimmy. Moving down here and hanging out with all those young girls. You should keep your love for your wife. Why don't you do that, eh?
Go ahead and be angry if you want. Anything's better than this.
I see her in here all the time when you're off playing in Anna's Skull. Do you know that? I'd say you could do worse than save your love for your wife.
Go ahead. Better out than in.
She's a very attractive woman as any. My advice to you now, Jimmy, and I don't normally hand out free advice, being a very busy man, as I explained to you before. My advice to you is to mind your own business and let other people mind theirs.
When stirred, I could be a nasty drunk and a bastard when shaken. And he had shaken me, to be fair. Of course, I felt sorry after, but not sorry enough to say sorry. Later that night, I was poured out the door of Ashes at 1 o'clock. I couldn't find the car. Couldn't remember where I'd parked it or if I'd taken it at all. I staggered to the cottage in the dark and saw something odd outside the door. A small table that Maura had kept plants on had been shifted to one side of the front door. The plants had been placed carefully on the ground, and there was some odd shape on the table that I couldn't make out in the dark. I didn't wake until late the next day, and after finishing half a bottle of wine, I went outside and there it was. A plate of food covered with cellophane, meat and vegetables, with gravy that was all congealed on the plate. I took the food and threw it into the wheelie bin outside the gate, smashing the plate against the wall. I roared as loud as I could. I screamed.
Don't come snooping around here! Stay away from me!
The sound echoed back to me off the hills. I scattered the bits of plate across the entrance as a kind of warning. I reckoned that would settle it, but I reckoned wrong. When I got back that evening, there was another plate, this time with a mess of salad, with some kind of grey fish. I dumped the thing over the wall and smashed the plate again. I was furious. The next evening, a chicken curry with rice, covered over in cellophane and tinfoil. I unpeeled the thing, and the stink of it made me retch. But as I got used to the stench, something happened. An uncontrollable hunger came over me. I put the curry in the microwave and let it turn. I was ravenous. I devoured the foul thing, burning my tongue I ate so fast. There was even some naan bread that I used to mop up every last stain of sauce. When I got back that night, another plate, this time with an ugly pattern of yellow and green flowers. And so it went on, day after day. And I did eat the food. I felt so bad that I'd broken the first plate, so I washed them carefully now and put them in a pile outside the door. After a while, I could see a pattern emerging. The designs on the plates were appearing at intervals. Some sort of rota system was at work. It was only when the pile grew to be a column that it struck me. These people are in league against me. How dare they? What right have they to put a higher value on my life than I do myself? Kingdom people, masters of intrigue and roundabout ways. I walked out into the roadway and stood and looked around me at the silent hills and realized something. I realized that I was hopelessly outnumbered. I went back inside the house and took a shower. Jimmy's shower was bloody good. I stayed in it for over an hour and cried more than I've ever cried in my life. And when all the fight had washed out of my heart, I made a decision. The kind of strong decision that you can only make when you're at your weakest. I took a suit from the wardrobe and shaved and drove to see Maura. There were teddy bears and a tin whistle and other childish things spread out around the grave. I had a long talk with her and she tried to put me right. I fought with her for a long time, but she won in the end, like she always won in the end. And she wouldn't be Maura if she didn't have the last word.
Do you remember that night you and Jimmy took me out to Inchstrand? And you carried me in your arms for half a mile and laid me on a blanket in the dunes. And you with your back.
You were as light as a bird, like as if your bones were hollow. You said you wanted to say goodbye.
I did. To the night sky, of all things. I don't know how you put up with me. Must have been the pills. You were very good to me, Tom.
There wasn't a cloud. Not a glimmer of light as far as the eye could see. But the stars. We were lit there in the dark by the bloody stars.
And Jimmy piped up like the voice of God. I'd forgotten he was there.
The darker the place you go to, the better you can see the stars.
Don't be afraid, Tom. Don't be afraid of the dark.
Why didn't you tell me? When you knew?
I didn't want to spoil it.
Is that what I'm doing now?
We all have to die one day. But we have to live, all the others. It's not so bad.
Once I got back on my feet, the meals in the night stopped. One day at a time now. I'm spending the days walking Saoirse on the beach or walking the hills to try to find her in the things she loved, the things she painted. I'm not so afraid now. I've even conquered the washing machine.
I brought some of the girls down to see the headstone. Your man did a marvellous job on it. Are you decorating or what?
I'm sorting out our Kerry paintings. There's so many. What do you think of this? Is it an abstract or something she used to clean her brushes with? I don't know whether to keep it or throw it away.
Keep it? You've enough here for another exhibition. That's what you should do. That's what Maura would do if she was here. And she is here. She'll look at her everywhere. It looks a bit like an elephant. Or a horse. Keep it.
You don't happen to know anything about that pile of plates outside the front door?
Which pile is that now?
The one with the very prominent sign hanging on it.
Please take what is yours and thank you. Not a bad sign, that, as signs go.
People come and go all the time, but no one will take a single plate. They won't fall for that trick. It never happened, did it?
What difference does it make? Isn't it things like them plates that makes the world what it is? Shifting the boat under the ground, pushing things together, making mountains out of molehills. You know what I mean? Like God putting up the Christmas decorations.
You know, I think that painting could be an elephant, all right.
Or a horse on a pogo stick.
Or me, maybe, one of the mornings after ashes.
Jesus, now you mention it, there's an uncanny resemblance.
When the exhibition day arrived, the whole community came out as a tribute to a blow-in who had loved the land as much as they did themselves. It was an emotional day for me. I hadn't felt anything for a while, but for the first time since Maura's death, I felt part of the place again.
I need someone like yourself, an outsider. Someone who's completely beyond reproach. The Madra Vision Song Contest is what we're calling it. You know, like the Eurovision, it's a three-dog race.
Oh, I don't think so, Paddy. I'd like to, but it's not really my...
Yeah, it's a bit of crack, a bit of old nonsense, sure.
A bit of nonsense now and then is savoured by the wisest men. When would it be?
Good men. Come in on Wednesday night and Jimmy will put you through your paces. The Kerry kids will be doing all the backing music, so they will.
I chatted with people and served them finger food. On what else but those gypsy-coloured Kerry plates? Watching for the least sign of recognition. But in matters of the heart, these people are as silent as the mountains that hem them in. Their silence told me I was playing a foreign game, that from here on in, I should keep watch, like them, on that point on the horizon where the ocean meets the sky, where death meets life. And when my time came, I would set sail, like for a point beyond that point, and only then see the land and the sea as it should be seen, going away from it.
We've been listening to Kerry Plates by Shay Linehan with Clive Geraghty as Tom. Deirdre Donnelly played Maura, Brendan Conroy was Paddy, Andrew Bennett was Jimmy, and the Doctor was played by Joe Taylor. The music was performed by Jim and Ian Lockhart. Sound supervision was by Mark McGrath and sound effects by Brian O'Neill. Kerry Plates by Shay Linehan was produced by Aidan Matthews. And if you or anyone you know is affected by some of the issues raised in the play, you can find help and support at rte.ie/helplines.
rte.ie/drama on one.
And now Drama on One continues with Limekiln Lane, written and performed by Louise Lewis. While most crime decreased during the pandemic, the notable exception was domestic violence, the majority of which was perpetrated against women. On Garda Síochána registered an increase of 25% more complaints and calls for help. Women's Aid responded to a 43% increase in calls from women trapped with abusers at home. Globally, domestic violence statistics became what medical professionals called a pandemic within a pandemic. In tonight's play, Louise Lewis plays a woman at the end of the phone and at the end of her tether. This is Limekiln Lane, written and performed by Louise Lewis, and listeners are advised that the play contains some strong adult themes.
He wouldn't be able for another lockdown. We wouldn't be able for that. No, no, no. I'm sorry. I don't know why I called. I haven't done this before. Well, there was one other time, I think, but look, it's okay. It's not that bad. Well, you know yourself, it's complicated. When's an us is you? I can't believe I'm laughing. Why am I laughing? The kids, they're gone out. Dara took them out. He's 14. Going on 50, poor thing. The girls, they're 10 and 7. Serious little things. Dara minds them for me. He's very good. Wait. No, wait. Stop talking. I need to go. No, I need to go now. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Please. No, I won't hang up. Just hold on. It's okay. I thought, you know, he was coming back. But it's okay. Oh, you're very good at this. You just listen, is it? It's very calm. And sorry I haven't called you more. People, I'm sure, think, how do you live like that? But it's not every day, and well, it's just, I can't do another lockdown. It just got worse and worse as the weeks went on. The minute he kicked off, I'd shoved her out the door with the girls. He rarely goes for them anyway. They just spend their time moving from the kitchen to the sitting room. He walks in one room, they go in the other. That just goes on all day. They're like yo-yos back and forth. I can't have them schools closed again. I can't have them here. Dara started to sleep on the floor of the girls' room on bad nights. and I told him not to call the police. It'll only make it worse. We did that years ago after the youngest was born. I was done with him. But he always got back in. Charm his way in. Countless promises. And I loved him. I even had a cop tell me to give him another chance. With three young kids. I know there are options. I know. I'm not good on my own. But now. It was grand for a while. A few years, really. He was threatening in other ways, but I managed. It was this feckin' COVID thing just sent him walking the floors he was, threw out all me books. The books I read. Didn't want me attention on anything else. Imagine being jealous of books. Oh, me marrying Kees. Oh, I love Maeve Binchy. I know. But me ma got me into her. She left me all her books when she died. She didn't have much, but she loved her stories. All them books gone. Bastard. Sorry. I could forgive a lot, but not that. They were my ma's. I'm sorry. I do miss the reading. Bit of escape. I have a book shoved down the back of the sofa. He's no idea. I've read it 100 times, but. Well, like I said, it's an escape, isn't it? In your head. Oh, and he thought you'd do the homeschooling. Fancied himself as a teacher now that he wasn't working. Full of himself he was. It started out grand, but of course Darren and the girls know more than we do. Jesus, that sent him over the edge. Effing and blinding because he didn't know where some poor African country was. Kids were terrified of him. They have to keep those schools open. The girls are in after school so they don't get home till 5. That's their little haven. I can't be having them here. Not now. Not now. Oh, Jesus. That's him. That's him at the door. I bet he's forgot his key. Shit, shit, shit. Oh no, it's okay. It's just a package for next door. Oh, shopaholic Marion is. That's her next door. Packages coming morning, noon and night for her. But she's been very good to me. Takes the kids in some days if she sees them falling in. Begging me to leave, she does be. He hates her. Well, he hates everything right now. Nothing is right. Well, it never really is, but. Well, and I can't do anything right. He wants us all to be something we're not. And when we don't do what he wants, well, you know. Look, I better go. I have to think. I can't. Me sister wants me to stay with her. But we just got the house. Did I say that? Yeah, we just moved in here just before the lockdown. Blessed we were that we got it. Sure, no one's getting houses. I'll never get him out. He's all about the house. And he started on this again. It's only going to get worse. He's probably in the local now. You know, they were serving all through the lockdown. Handing pints out the back, they were. He'd be up there early, arrive home at lunchtime. You wouldn't know who you'd get. Mr. Happy, Mr. Sad, Mr. I'm gonna fucking kill you. I'm sorry. He cracked a rib on me second week. I didn't want to go to hospital. Got some painkillers from the Umfla at the end of the road. Horse feckin' tranquilizers, more like. Making a killing, he said he was. People were taking all sorts to relieve the boredom. All ages too. Terrible, isn't it? I'm after taking a couple there now. From me cheek, it's killing me. Me vision isn't great either. A hospital? Oh no, no, no. He'll be back soon. I need to get myself together. The kids will be here. I don't want Dara going for him again. God, he gave him a good smack, Dara did, but well, he's only 14. He didn't stand a chance. I thought he'd kill him when he came after him. I got Dara out, but I might not be so lucky next time. Stopping him with Dara, I mean. Or maybe myself. I might not be so lucky next time. Oh, Jesus, I can't leave the kids with him. I don't know what to do. Oh, God. I've got to think. Think. Maybe we can start somewhere else. Can you? Maybe you would... Too many maybes. That's the problem, isn't it? Oh, God, I think my cheek is broken. Oh, can you break your cheek? Did you hear that? Did you? Oh, I might go into Marion. God, these tablets are making me woozy. Oh. No, no, no. No, I have to go. No, he'll be back soon. No, I can't. I... Okay. Yeah, okay. I'll hold on.
That was Limekiln Lane, written and performed by Louise Lewis. Sound supervision was by Mark Dwyer, and the director was Goretti Slaven. If you or anyone you know is affected by the issues raised in the play, you can find help and support at rte.ie/helplines. Now, Mary McDermott, CEO of Safe Ireland, Mary Brown, director of Foyle Women's Aid, and Sarah Benson, CEO of Women's Aid, reflect on and discuss the issues raised in tonight's play, Limekiln Lane, written and performed by Louise Lewis.
My name's Sarah Benson. I'm the CEO with Women's Aid. Women's Aid was founded back in 1974 as a response to the lack of support services, awareness for victims of domestic violence in Ireland.
I'm Mary McDermott. I'm the CEO of Safe Ireland. And Safe Ireland is long in existence, over 20 years. It is a national social change agency. That's our primary purpose. We're a network of 39 refuges and support services all around the country and under great pressure these days.
My name is Mary Brown. I'm the director of Foyle Women's Aid and the Family Justice Centre here in Foyle. I have worked for Foyle Women's Aid for 27 years. Foyle Women's Aid was set up as a result of the domestic violence and the women's movement in the 70s. There was a lot of domestic violence happening in the city, as there still is, but there was nothing or nowhere to go, and it was very much behind closed doors and nobody talking about it.
I had the chance to listen to the play by Louise Lewis, Limekiln Lane, and coming from my own professional background, I've worked over 20 years in the violence against women sector, including 7 actually delivering the national helpline itself. I found it a really powerful expression of one woman's experience of an abusive relationship.
When I first heard Limekiln Lane, the play, I was really quite moved by it. The first thing that I thought immediately was a woman lifted up the phone and made the call. And that, of course, is probably the most difficult thing to do, because before you get to that point itself, you have to have begun to realise what's happening. You have to be able to name it and take action. And so I found that very powerful.
As a professional in the area, it's interesting to have a play like this and to have different venues of where we can talk about domestic violence and different ways in which we can get the understanding out there of domestic violence.
I suppose I also responded to it very much on a personal level as well. There were certain points in the play which I found really resonated and really cut to the core of the tactics of an abusive relationship, because in just 15 minutes, you know, the unfolding of this woman's life and just how claustrophobic it was and just how fearful she was, but also those other ways in which her husband was targeting her, you know, getting into her head, denying her even, you know, a creative inner life. And there was a particular scene which relates to books and the destruction of books. And that scene probably to me spoke the most to the heart of what an abusive relationship can do and how cruel it can be, because while there is no physical violence in that particular act, it was an act that took away her right to an intellectual life, to an imagination, but also really particularly it took away something that was deeply personal to her, because these were an inheritance effectively. They were part of her legacy. So that particular act of cruelty, I think, to me, expressed more than anything else in that play just how horrific it is to live with somebody who is so controlling, so abusive, so motivated to hurt. Yeah, I thought it was very powerful.
When we are trying to understand domestic violence, it can be very difficult. And often we turn to issues such as drink or class or indeed race or anything else we can find to put a blame for where this comes from. And in the context of COVID, Safe Ireland, we're very clear that actually COVID is not causing abuse. It's just exposing it. And it's exposing really deep patterns that have been there for a very long time.
After listening to the short play, Limekiln Lane, I was just very struck by, you know, it just caused all of the stresses that are there and domestic violence and the pressure that woman was under to lift the phone, because that's how it sounds. You know, they lift the phone, they're terrified in the house, they're terrified in case somebody comes in. They're terrified to speak to you when they do come on. It may be the first time they've talked to anybody. So all of that I just felt was so there, you know, in the play.
The experiences of the woman that were expressed in this play, I've spoken with women who live in the most affluent neighbourhoods of this country. I've spoken to women in, you know, very high professional roles, you know, who are still nonetheless being subjected to that kind of behaviour and abuse. So while, you know, we may sometimes fall into stereotypical tropes around, you know, who is the victim and, you know, and who is the perpetrator, you know, domestic abuse is just so completely democratic in that it is not actually about class. It is actually about misogyny in many cases, but it's really fundamentally about power and control and an individual who wants to exert many different tactics to achieve power and control over their partner, their current or former partner.
You can feel her traumatised state immediately. You can feel her hypervigilance. There's a creeping tension through the drama, her restlessness. You can pick up on her lack of confidence. She's, you know, she makes the reference to not being good on her own. And that's I felt like a clench in my heart when that was in the play, because I was thinking, yes, you know, the confidence goes away, the states of dependence that are created in course of controlling situations, micromanagement, manipulation, pulling away of your sense of confidence, closing down in your social world, closing down on family. It's kind of an assault on mental health, really. So I felt that very strongly, not good on my own.
There should always be a message of hope, because, you know, those women, whilst the organisations are here, we just facilitate them and support them. But the women are the strong ones that take the steps, and they are the ones that change their lives. And they are the ones that are best able to tell us how to do that. And they are the ones that are best able to tell their stories so that we understand for the next woman that we're working with.
Domestic violence is not a personal flaw or an individualised problem. It is a large-scale social problem, and we learn it. But by the same token, we can unlearn it, and we believe we can do that. And that's a core element of our work.
You know, plays like this have such an important role as, you know, just in their own right as artistic creations always, you know, and that lovely creative process. But ones that take on subjects like this also have that additional power in that they will speak to people who would never think of picking up the phone to a helpline, and yet they hear something like this and it helps them to think, well, you know, maybe that is something I could do. And if it's like that, you know, maybe it won't be so scary.
The closing line of the play, I really love that. I'll hold on. And of course, my thought is hold on through the line, call again. Not the holding on of surviving under abuse. Reach out, stretch out. There's support there where she can get support and be held on that journey out of that situation.
There we heard the voices of Mary McDermott, CEO of Safe Ireland, Mary Brown, Director of Foyle Women's Aid, and Sarah Benson, CEO of Women's Aid, discussing the issues raised in tonight's play, Lime Kiln Lane, which was written and performed by Louise Lewis. This evening's edition of In the Wings was compiled by Goretti Slaven. And again, if you or anyone you know is affected by the issues raised in the play, you can find help and support at rte.ie/helplines. Next week's Drama on One is The Blue Hyacinth by Maeve Brennan, adapted and directed by Joe O'Byrne. The series producer of Drama on One is Kevin Reynolds.
Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.